This is the Andres Segovia Show.
Welcome, everyone, to the Andres Segovia Show. On this episode, I have special guest, Curious Joel, and I'll let him do the intros. Joel, welcome to the Andres Segovia Show. Introduce yourself to people.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Like you said, I'm Curious Joel. My podcast, Curious Joel, is just about me diving into the topics of people's passion and interesting conversations. I like to get into the nitty gritty of the personal experience that people have had with different things. Whatever their passion is, I like to get into the behind the scenes, the background, the everyday life, the struggles, the things that like were easier, the things that people didn't expect to be as hard, the things that just they don't normally talk about out in the open, you know. I like to get past the public relations answers to things. I like to get to know the mind behind the passion, you know. And I just dive into that. I'm going to be having some interesting conversations come up where we're just talking about our topic and just kind of diving into the topic and getting nitty gritty into that.
That sounds interesting, but I have to ask, are you being sarcastic right now? You're wearing a sarcastic society shirt, so
yes, we do need your support. I also am a very, very big advocate of humor. I think it's a very good way to deal with a lot of things to some extent. You know, I'm a very serious person, but you know, laughter is medicine. You know, that's scientifically proven to some extent that, you know, laughing is actually really healthy for you. Unless you die laughing like one guy did in history. I wish I remembered his name. But that'd be a fantastic way to go. But I can be serious and I can also be very funny. But yeah.
Yeah, and I totally relate to that. I'm a very sarcastic person as well. But that was actually one of my first promos of my shots on Instagram. Or I think the caption was, "I'm a very sarcastic guy. Is that going to be a problem?" You know, because I'm supposed to be a business professional, but yet I'm hyperly sarcastic. I've been having a lot of fun with she's 9 years old now, my daughter, and I saw her when she was developing a sense for catching my sarcasm. Like, oh, all right, I could have fun with my daughter being sarcastic. She's playing on me now. So I'm like, yeah, you were being sarcastic. And I was like, It's like, So, and it's fun because it's a good vibe. It's a good, we jive very well, and I totally get you. I feel like I would take the cat out of the bag if I mention it now, but I'll tell you after. I'll see the suspense for when we're done recording. I'll tell you off air on this one.
All right, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm not being sarcastic either. So and as I mentioned in the pre-interview, one of the things that I wanted to pick up on was when we did the stream, which I really appreciate you lending your time to come on. It was fun. I want to do more of those. I usually do tech talks, but that time I like to celebrate my third anniversary of the show as it is now. Yeah. I'm like, I wanted to talk with other people that are on their own podcasting adventure, you know? And it was just like that. And I looked through my followers and like, all right, they have a podcast. There are others that are not doing podcasts, but are trying to be like their own influencers on their own, own way. I am making time for them as well. I wanted to do this phase first because I do have other ones that are shifting the focus of their podcast. I'm working on them getting on my show. You were one of them too. So I was curious and I was being semi-sarcastic when I was saying it too. I'm like, I hope you can hear my sarcasm when I say it. So that's why I decided to look through and say, you know what? I want to talk to these folks, even though I never interacted with any of them. And I have a plethora of content for people to turn back to say, does Andres do a gotcha stuff? No, people can see what I'm very passionate about, the things that do anger me. And I do not hide my Christian conservative status. That's a front and center. People know it. So that's why you know where I'm coming from. But I also like having conversations with people. So that's why when I was looking through and I was inviting, I was very happy that you came on. It was fun having you on, despite some technical difficulties. We hope we get him on, and we did. And I had some others say, hey, let's get him back on. Say, we will. Wait, what do you mean we? So you mean guys, you want to do this again? Oh, let's do it then. So that worked out very well. But on that stream, that as you were mentioning, as you prefaced here of what your podcast is, I am curious to tap into that. What inspired you to, like, there must have been something that you saw and you were just ultimately quite literally curious, how did that come to be? And you were, was it an impression of something or someone that they went through to your journey to see the whatever it was that they went through just to create this one piece of whatever it was?
I would equate that not to a specific point in my life, because I have always had, I grew up with this insatiable curiosity. Mm. Like, I was never satisfied with, well, that's just the way it is, you know? And whatever that thing is, I would, like, my brain would start, the gears would start spinning, right? You know, once my brain had a chance to, like, huh, interesting. You know, there's always something behind everything. And like in a when you start looking at humans and how humans exist, you know, what they do on a daily basis, how they do what they do, there's always reasons behind it. Mm. And my mom was always would talk about, like, well, if I put it somewhere, I probably put it there for a reason. Right. I'm like, well, I guess, you know, I sometimes would think about it, but still there's a lot of times we don't think about what we do, but I would pay attention to that a lot. And, like, you know, there's so many different things in my life, in my childhood, even that, like, it was just fascinating of, like, I got to be a participant in a magic show when I was very little. And it was one of the ones where, like, they basically levitate you on a board as they pull the chairs out each direction. And, you know, I'm sitting there like, okay, I can feel the chairs leaving, but I also know I'm floating and I can't tell where I'm floating from. And my brain, as I'm sitting there, is going like, how is he doing this?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. You know, I also had a lot of these things have to do with magic. Which
let's go there, man.
I had a really cool dentist growing up. He was just awesome. Like, he made it so much fun to be at the dentist office that you actually wanted to go to the dentist. Mm. And I grew up being very confused. I was like, why does everyone hate going to the dentist so much? Like,
right.
But, like, we'd get these really cool toys, which I know some dentists did that. But, like, everybody there knew who you were, talked to you, enjoyed you. Like, enjoyed you coming in. It wasn't just, like, a job. It was them. They're part of the community, basically. Mm. And I remember one time, like, I was being worked on by the dental hygienist, and, like, the big guy walked in and he did, like, two rubber band tricks just to distract me from whatever. I don't remember what was going on. He did a good job. I don't remember it, but he just did two just really quick rubber band tricks right there. And I'm like, and, like, instantly what went through my head at whatever young age I was like, wow, that is very considerate of him to learn something outside of his profession that would help him in his profession of especially working with kids that might not like everything going on in their mouth.
Hmm.
And like, but that consideration of this person going outside of their, you know, what other dentists do you know that have purposely learned any other skill besides dentistry to help their dentistry, you know? And that, like, as a child, that was like, huh. That to me showed that he cared a lot about his job enough to go above and beyond, you know, but like, there's so many things that people do that there's reason behind it that people, sometimes they don't even think about, you know? Mm-hmm. And I like finding that out because that's just like, I like diving into people's brains because each brain is very unique. You know, they might have some similar end results that come out, but usually the process, that whole process of like coming up with these ideas and making that thought are very interesting to me. And so I find that the more passionate somebody is about something, the easier it is to dive into how their brain works to get that out. They could all produce the same exact thing, but each person's perspective and their mind that got that same thing out is a very beautiful thing to look at. Does that make sense? This sounds a little weird.
No. It definitely makes sense. I'm following all your logic. I mean, what trips me up though is that you were a kid. How old were you?
I don't know. I guess a lot about my ages, but like as a like 5-year-old, I was using big words. I talked about this on my podcast and I was like, okay, if someone asks me, I need to be able to verify this. So I talked to my mom. He's like, yeah, you know, around 4 and 5, like I'd hear a word in a conversation, like a big word. Mm-hmm. And if it was used in context, I could use it in a sentence the next day. No problem.
Fascinating.
I very much was a fast learner in a lot of things, and in some things I wasn't. Mm-hmm. But whatever I could do, it was easy for the most part. But I grew up a little quicker than in some ways than I probably should have from a normal perspective. Mm-hmm. In other ways, I still haven't grown up. but yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, I was originally going to get into automotive engineering when I was going to college.
Okay.
Life took a different course, obviously. I ended up getting business, and I'm not even involved in anything related to the automobile industry. But mm-hmm. what fascinated me was physics. I have always loved what make mm-hmm. things go boom. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. so how? So understanding thermodynamics, aerodynamics, mm-hmm. friction, gravity, combustion and all mm-hmm. that, weight, like all of it fascinated me. I mean, I didn't realize at what point, kind of like what you're saying, like at what point did I start loving math? I don't know. But what I did love about math, it was absolute. It's like there mm-hmm. is no right or wrong answer. No, it's the answer. Or it's not the, well, I forgot the minus sign. No, because if it was actual science, it'd be going the other way. It's a wrong answer. So mm-hmm. it always fascinated me to what degree you move something, you can have the biggest of impact. And mm-hmm. that's what, well, what's the best way to see physics in motion here among us? It's a car. It's a vehicle. And that mm-hmm. always fascinated me because it wasn't just about getting the vehicle to go from A to Z, like boom. Also, mm-hmm. how do you get it to go from Z to A? And what if on its way to Z, something interfered? Where the people inside can be safe, if at all.
Yeah.
You know, all of that into a vehicle, I mean, it was the most fascinating thing. Now, obviously, mm-hmm. I didn't get into that, but it always drove me to really like look into more of that, and which is why I appreciate the things, because I recently got this thing. I haven't showcased this yet, so this is a good opportunity to do it. There's this company started as a Kickstarter, and they recently released what is called the Interstellar Edition. This is a pen, and their base is magnetic, but the whole idea is that the pen just sits there magnetically.
That's in the so position. Cool.
I know, and I was not considering this pen when I was looking for it. I didn't even know it existed. Uh-huh. When I saw it, I'm like, oh, I had to have it. That thing looked really cool. And it was originally a silver or chrome pen, I think, something along those lines. So they recently released this matte black one, kind of like I don't know if they were in homage to NASA, but they call it the Interstellar Edition. And I guess the way they blacked it out, it looked pretty interstellar to me as a silhouette. So I'm like, all right, I'll take that pen. And I did. And ever since I got it, because people can't see my desk. This is not my studio, but my desk. It's matte black everything, basically, with with mostly Batman logos.
So, nice.
Yeah, but that's so to what you were saying, I completely and totally relate to exactly what you're saying, because mm-hmm. I can relate to that. I went through that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's something that I've realized is that most people that care about what they do have a similar mindset to some degree. So like I had a graphic design artist that in her mind didn't have an imagination.
Interesting.
But what got her there was like she went to school for it. She learned about it. Like she had always been interested in like the technological details of art. So like she started with PowerPoint and like would just make PowerPoints for fun and found out you can like make a choose your own story. Like if you click here on the PowerPoint, it'll take you over to this slide. Mm-hmm. But if you click here on the PowerPoint, it'll take you over to this slide. And then from here you have branches and over there you have branches. And I'm like, I'm sitting there going like, I didn't even know you could do that once, much less more than once and right. have multiple options, but cool. You know? And then she went to graphic design college and like, she was learning all about this different stuff. And like, she gets so far into the details of how these different things interact and how they work together. And, you know, and that granted her the ability to take what imagination she had that she didn't think she had. She was like, I don't have an imagination. Like at the end, she admitted that like, okay, I do have an imagination. It just works differently. But that's how she's able to visualize. So she doesn't have a very visual imagination, but she can take what she does have and put it into her graphic designs, and they're fantastic. But it was all that behind the scenes, like how do each of these things work and interact with each other that gets this, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, the people, pretty much everyone I've interviewed, excuse me, it's a lot about the details about, okay, when you break it down all the way down to the ground, like what does it look like? Mm-hmm. What changes it from A to B? What changes it from this to that? You know, all these different things that change the basics, you know? And like you're talking about the car, of like the physics of like, yeah, you can get the thing to go. How does it stop? Okay, that's friction. You know, how do you interact with this? And how do you change the motion, the direction of the motion and all these different things that go into a car? That's what most of everyone that I've talked to does, is they kind of go into like the, all right, let's break it down to the basic elements and then start from there all the way up.
Hmm.
And, you know, I'm very fascinated with the process of everything. So my show, it was just a natural thing after I'd done another podcast. It didn't take off. But I had all this equipment and I was like, okay, what can I do with this equipment? I feel like I want to make more. I want to make more content. I want to I need a creative outlet. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I have these conversations with people all the time. Usually it's cut off because they have to get back to work or they have to go do something. If I dedicate time to actually, hey, let you and me, we are going to sit down. We're going to talk about this. Explain to me exactly how this works. Okay. How in the world did you get into this? Cool. And like, just, and then from there, for me, it's a natural breakdown of like, okay, what's the next question?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you were talking about like, I'm not sure if this is earlier in this episode or if it was before we started recording, but you're talking about like, you know, you might take something and just latch onto that and just follow that where it goes. And like, that's just what I do. Like that's my whole podcast, is like, I have a set of questions. I'm like, I definitely need to make sure I remember to ask this question.
Yeah.
But everything in between is just like, okay, whoa, hold on. Go back to that. What does that mean? Explain that. Okay. How does that work? And then just kind of going off on that. So.
Yeah. And that's what makes it more natural, more comfortable. Cause like when I had guests, and I had mentioned this before we started recording, that I was a lot of their first podcast, mm-hmm. because some of them just, they don't want to do it. They're afraid of the microphone. Yeah. They can take their selfies, but they won't be in front of the microphone. I guess they have something about not wanting to hear their own voice and things like that.
Yeah.
My goodness.
I hear that a lot.
Well, the first time I heard my voice spoken back to me, I'm like, I don't think I'm ever going to do a podcast. And then what really switched in my mind is like, I love my voice. The voice that I hear obviously is not the one that y'all hear, which is unfortunate. All you're missing out. But then it did hit me. But everybody else hears that voice. Yeah. So then I'm like, so why am I concerned about that? So I stopped. And then I just took off with podcasts. Like, oh, I'm going to make this a thing. And I did. I made it a thing. And now when I'm hearing it, the most exhausting thing of a creator's process that people don't know, this, what we're doing here, is the easiest part of this. Mm-hmm. It's the after post-production that takes forever.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah. And then the worst part is, I was telling you that I was there was an interview that I had to save because of technical difficulties. We're talking about almost an hour long, and I had to go through it like four times just to make sure it was right. So that means four times just to listen to it. That's added to what is called editing, and then the overlays and all that.
Yeah,
and then playing it all back. You know, just the first draft, the second draft, until you get to the final draft. And these things take. They take time. I would love to just be able to turn the camera on and throw it out the door. I can do that with this program I'm using now, StreamYard. And so shout out to StreamYard, I suppose. But when I do some tech talks, I do them live. Oh, I used to do them live when I had more time to do it on the schedule. I would just fire up. Right now it's doing a pre-recording, but I would just be live. And what I love about doing live is that there's like the switch in the back of my mind that goes off and says, you only have one shot at this. And it's subconscious and it just goes with it. And you just need to be comfortable, like whether you're talking to somebody or just talking to the camera, that you don't know how many people are watching. It could be zero. It could be 1,000. You don't know. And you know, you just go with it. But it's a tangent. But that's this whole thing about like creating something. It has been a long time coming, and to me, I felt like it hitting my third year as what is the Andres Segovia Show is basically a culmination of everything I've always wanted to do since the beginning, because the tools didn't exist yet. They do now. They cost money, of course, but it's a lot easier to do it. It wasn't like that back then. It was hard. I have some rough podcasts from way back in the day. What else could I have done?
No, I
do enjoy them, and I like them.
I had a few people that couldn't get past my first two episodes because I didn't know how to edit the audio quality well, and I also didn't record it very well. And I'd done those interviews like a year before I actually posted them, and so they're just like, they're really bad. I'm like, guys, just get past the first two episodes. The other quality gets better. And then from there, it just kind of keeps going up a little bit. Because every time I learn a little bit more. So I totally get that.
I was being a perfectionist with my first episode. I drafted. I knew what I was going to write about. Because, well, I have to also admit that the early episodes of my show are, because it's a real estate centric or business now, show, was quite frankly informing people about real estate. Like, how do you make that entertaining when people don't even want to tune in the first place? That my friends and family are like, yeah, you know, we support you, it's just that's not my cup of tea. Well, that's not really supporting me. You're not tuning in, you know. So I need the clicks, I need the likes, I need the shares. And so things started picking up when I started doing podcasts in Espanol. So when I switched some episodes in Spanish, I did 6 episodes in Spanish, because they were just really informative things, so I could speak to that and keep them condensed. The one I couldn't do, but it's coming up, and it's more fitting now because it speaks to my community. It's going to be like financing and loans and all that. That is coming, so I'm announcing it now for folks so they can be in the know. But when things really shifted was when I had to address certain things that were happening at the state level that were affecting real estate. And now I'm like, well, now this is my wheelhouse because I have to address these political actions coming against it. So I addressed that. And as soon as I did that, suddenly Andres is getting political. Like, I'm informing you of legislation that is affecting you. And it just so happens that we live in a one-party state and they're the ones pushing it. And I'm telling you what they are doing. So that's where I got some pushback. But then I started getting noticed by others. It's like, okay, so are you going to be letting in more of politics? Like, no. I'm going to be addressing it, just that some people take facts and say, no, you're just giving your political opinion. It's like, that's the unfortunate world of politics in the arena of ideas, because they just think they're just fighting ideas, but each side is entrenched on their own ideology and said, no, it's this way. There is no other way. There's no in between. Come over here or you come over here. Unless we're never going to agree. Whatever. But there is a place and time for that. That's why I do what is called off the record. I do locals because I can't shut up about it either. That's when I invite you to come over here if you really want to have those conversations, because I don't want, I'm done with the shouting. This book, The Andres Segovia Show, Transcripts of the Early Days, this is the first book I made. This is over 500 pages the way it's printed, and it's pretty thorough. There's some spacing in between, but the real version has a bunch of pictures and graphics that I legally couldn't put into the book. So that's unfortunate. But that is, to me, it's history. And it is politically driven, because that's what I did. That was the show.
Yeah.
But I'm tired of all the talking heads and the shouting and things like that. That's why I'm like, you know, I'm not being effective if I'm just going to be another shouting voice among all the people that are shouting, you know? And so it's not going to, I had to walk it back and reframe my show. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's morphed a lot, actually, over the past several months, where I've been doing more interview heavy content. That's it. For lack of a better description, I tell people my show has unintentionally formed into something akin to what Joe Rogan does, because all he does is interviews. And that's kind of what my show has become in a way. Mm-hmm. It wasn't always intentional, but it does make it more interesting, where it's not just me, but I still have my episodes of discussing business and the effects that politics have on it and things like that. And if we want to get you the juicy content, like, oh, go to Locals. I'm not going to push it on you unless I know I have to. But until that point, that's really, it's all become a process. And I'm really giving you microcosm of what is almost 20 years worth of work. So it's been that kind of process to get to this point. And this show, like I said, when I started 3 years ago to rebrand it, being all pro and business, to finally get to just being comfortable and loose and more authentic instead of just being, okay, put on the suit and be pro. It just, I needed to get to that point, like finding my stride. And it was trial and error along the way. And people, I had to lose people. You lost me. I prefer the tech stuff. Like, I will also do the tech, but I'm not getting the tech that people are sending me. No one's sending me. I have to get it. And I'm not one of those people that start their YouTube channel by taking advantage of the Amazon return policy. That is such an awful way to do reviews. If I review a product, it's from a business standpoint, because I want to use the product. And if it worked, I keep it. If it doesn't, I send it back. But I was getting accused of trying to grow my channel because I was taking products and returning them if I didn't like them. It's like that had nothing to do with me just wanting to review the product. Yeah. And then those same people complain, like, how come you're not doing any more tech reviews? Because I'm not being supplied the tech.
Yeah. That's something that's like really hard about tech channels, is like, because I like tech a lot. We talked about this briefly before the episode. And like, I like tech, but I also like honest tech. You know, there, and a lot of people, like, once they get the sponsored items, they're scripted sponsored items, you know.
Yeah,
it's, well, this is the best product I've ever seen. It's like, did you say that about the last three things you've done? I missed the brand name on the bottom of the channel for this episode. It's like, it's sponsored by this. It's like, oh, are you sure? Because, oh yeah, you didn't say a single bad thing about this thing. You know, it's like, this is the best. It's like, what do you mean? From what you're telling me, this shouldn't be the best thing ever.
Right.
And like, if you don't have those sponsored things, it's really hard to, like, if you want the honest tech reviewers, oftentimes they're having to jump off of a already successful channel that they're making money off of, so they can buy the tech that they have, you know. And like, it's a really tricky, like, narrow road of like honest tech and, you know, can continually support this channel tech, you know, because if it's sponsored, a lot of the times those sponsored videos are not going to be honest, you know. And so it's that like trying to get that balance. And like, I've found a few that kind of do that well. And one of my personal favorite is Mr. Who's the Boss. And he has gotten, he will review things. And sometimes the company will be like, hey, can you review this? Like, sure. It's like, and here's what we want you to say. It's like, nope, I'll still review it, but you don't have to give me money. And it's like, that's the sigh of relief of like, thank you. You're still doing it. You went out and bought the thing so that you could give an honest review, because you weren't going to be swayed by whatever someone else is saying. And, you know, I know that with him, I can get an honest opinion, you know, and that's just something hard. Like, you know, like you're saying, like you had to get the products. You weren't being sponsored by anybody. Nobody's paying you to go out and buy these things. You have to supply that yourself. And that's just a really difficult thing to do.
Yeah. And speaking of latching, I want to latch on to that, because in this speaks to the heart of what I did primarily on YouTube for about 3 to 4 years before I shifted it to introducing business aspect of things. Because Mr. Who's the Boss, I've come across several times, but didn't follow him. I thought it was a little over the top, and I hated the name. And I'm still waiting for him to do that long-awaited episode where he finally reveals why is it called Mr. Who's the Boss.
Oh, he actually did that not too long ago.
Yeah, and I missed it. Yeah, fantastic. So, but
it's out there somewhere.
Yeah. So and when I did come across him again last year, no, it feels like it was last year. It might have been a little longer than that.
Time's a little funky right now.
Yeah, I know. Everything like melts into
a day. Last year, 2 years, three years ago.
Yeah. And he gained my respect when I saw him basically call out, not in a bad way, some of his fellow major tech reviewers in addressing certain device that was happening in the industry that he felt that people weren't entirely being honest about. I don't remember which device it was, but then he highlighted more when he talked about the Escobar phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hate having to even mention it like this, because I respect what he does, but it comes with his share of controversy. Mm-hmm. Lou at Unbox Therapy, he has some splaining to do still on certain things, and the fact that he just doesn't address them is what kind of upsets me. Escobar phone, he kind of shilled for it. And I'm like, dude, this thing's a fraud. It's literally a phone with a gold foil. Mr. Who's the Boss unmasked it, you know? That's what I mean about holding others accountable. Yeah. And I think he and Marcus at NKBHD were they were talking a little bit about this too.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, you guys need to because of their influence, right?
Yeah.
You guys, no, I mean, they need to be held accountable like Lou needs to. He's the biggest one.
And that's something that I think both Marquez and Aaron both do well, is like they understand that their job as a tech reviewer is something that affects people's everyday life. Mm-hmm. You know, they know that like if they say, hey, this phone is good, people are going to go out and buy that phone. And if it's not good, that's money those people lost, mm-hmm. you know, and they understand that weight of like, I can only in good conscience recommend things that I would actually be okay if my sister went out and bought, my mom went out and bought these things. That's what, and like, I know Aaron's really good about like, is this the best phone on the market? Yes. Is it worth it for you to buy it? Probably not. You know, you don't need half of these features. It's a great phone, but honestly, this is the phone you should probably get. If these are your needs, you don't need this one.
Yeah.
And like, he's just very down to earth and realizes that he affects like people's lives. Like, he understands that weight and responsibility.
And I think of all the content creators, the big ones, tech influencers, I think he's the one having the most fun. My kids love watching his videos. And every now and then it's like, hey, it's Pokemon. Like, oh, he's a Pokemon fan, all right. they love it. And the fact that he does like the most random of things. I tested the 22 weirdest devices, or the 22 biggest devices, or the smallest and largest. Like, and he buys with his money.
Yeah, and like, and that's something that he also is, again, going back to the down to earth, he's also like, hey guys, this is all possible because you guys are supporting me. If you guys didn't, this wouldn't be possible. I wouldn't be able to spend, you know, $2,000 on Wish if you guys weren't sponsoring me. And like, I love those things because like, you know, he's being honest, because like he'll think, like, I love his Wish videos just because they're so those funny.
The most fun. And
like,
yes.
One of my most like shocking moments was when he bought a legit fully functioning iPhone off of Wish.
Real, yes, I saw that.
Like, and I'm like, What do you mean a real iPhone?
He's like, send me the link.
He's like, yeah, I bought it for like a dollar. I'm like, and no, yeah. He's not lying about that. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah, because he shows the receipts quite literally. Yeah, I do follow Aaron. Mm-hmm. I don't follow Marquez. Every now and then, just because I'm curious, all right, what does he got to say about it? I'll chime in. Mm-hmm. He did offend me. I brought it up before because I had to call him out on it. I'm a BlackBerry guy, okay? I come from that world.
Okay.
I never seen someone that has such a large platform do such a lazy take on a device just because he doesn't like a BlackBerry. So he didn't even get the specs right. I'm like, dude, do you realize how many people you just turned away because you didn't do the homework? Like that, I don't forgive him for that. And I say that half joking. Because I'm like, okay, you hate BlackBerry. I get it. It's not for you. Just say it's not for you and move on, dude. Just don't even cover it. But the mere fact that he took time to make about a 7-minute video and never clarified, because I sent messages like, you got the specs wrong. And people came over to my channel because I covered that same phone, because I covered every BlackBerry that was going on since 2015. They're like, thank you for giving an honest take on a BlackBerry. That's how my channel took off on tech. Because I wanted to be the voice. That was, I think that was the video that broke the camel's back. I'm like, okay, that's enough. I'm going to dive straight into this and become a BlackBerry apostle. Let me spread the gospel of BlackBerry, but also holding BlackBerry to feet to the fire, because I called them out on everything.
Right.
But my first appearance on another podcast was actually the CrackBerry podcast from the biggest BlackBerry channel called CrackBerry and the biggest website at the time, CrackBerry. So the guy that runs it, Kevin Mikola in Canada, he and I did exchange pleasantries every now and then to stay in touch over the years. But I had to be that voice, and that's where those are my most watched videos. I had a worldwide audience, and people were sharing my videos because they say, this guy is speaking from the heart of a business person that knows. Because one of the things about tech, and this kind of goes to a lot of what we do, actually, you and I too, a small business owner doesn't have the economies of scale to buy everything to make their things operate properly. Mm-hmm. Like if they're going to, they need e-commerce, they need an email system, they need accounting and all that to manage things like that. Not to mention telecommunications or whatever. No, that's a lot of money, especially a small business when you're pouring your blood, sweat and tears into it. Yeah. At the time, as the developing of technology too, now things were becoming more efficient for us. At the time, the best tool for us to manage business was a BlackBerry. So people didn't understand what it meant to have a BlackBerry that you can manage notifications, manage all your accounts, to your reminders and everything, and what it meant to have a busy lifestyle, what it meant to just save those two clicks, what those two little clicks can do in throughout a day. Meant a big deal, and people didn't get there. Oh, a keyboard, so pathetic. Yeah, but I'm pounding out emails, not text messages here to send messages across. I'm not trying to T9 my way through a call here, you know.
Some people will never know the pains of T9.
and people didn't get it. So that's what my channel took off from, and I was grateful for that. And I showed people that, look, that's why I do business and tech, because I'm showing you how tech got me to do my business and business how I rely on tech. And that's kind of the hybrid of my show. Yeah. But that's where I took issue with NKBHD, because I felt that was the best chance for BlackBerry to reach the masses. And I think that what Marcus review, which was the most watched review of that video, did such an injustice to the product. And it was a first gen product. I'm like, nope. That's why I unsubscribed to him, and I haven't followed him since. Yeah, I still watch his videos every now and then. I like some of his content, and I respect his hustle, but I also find his videos boring. They look fantastic, but I find them boring, which is why I enjoy someone like Aaron. Where Aaron and everybody has their voice, and that's cool. Like Lou from Unbox Therapy, I unsubscribed to him because like every video was the same. Put the product in front of him, it's the same. Like it's the same video. Like you mentioned, all that's missing is the sponsored brand at the bottom. He's saying the same thing in every video. It's like, oh, dude, I'm done. This is just the same episode I just saw last time. You know, and that's why I was done with him. My favorite though And I credit to him, and I'm going to name drop in here because he's the one that encouraged me to do my YouTube video. Mr. Mobile, Michael Fisher, when he was still at Pocket Now, he's the one. I reached out to him. I was like, hey, look, I'm really curious to starting, man. I just don't even know where to begin on this. And what he mentions, like, hey, you know how I did it? I use a cell phone camera. That's how I did it. I had crappy audio. And then he shared that he made an episode of that on YouTube for Pocket Now just to share his experience. And then I'm like, all right, dude, I'll do it. And I'm like, hey, we'll see what happens. Yeah. Now look at me, 7 years later since I started. Yeah. So, Joel, we're going to wrap it here for this episode. Sure. And I want to thank you for coming on. Please let everybody know where they can follow your curiosity.
Yeah. So again, my podcast is Curious Joel. You can find it on pretty much every major podcast that I could find and get it on. And then you can find me on Twitter at Curious at Joel Serco. Sorry, I get that one confused. So really fun story I haven't been able to tell. It's like I had my Twitter that I had already had from something else, and I just renamed it because I couldn't get Curious Joel, and I couldn't get Curious Joel Cast either on Twitter. So I just stick with Joel Serco. And on Instagram, I was able to get Curious Joel Cast, but it was like, when I was like, okay, great, cool. I have it on one, but not all of them. So as I was saying, you can find me on Twitter at Joel Serco. You can find me on Instagram at Curious Joel Cast. And I just got an email up and running not too long ago that is curiousjoelcast@gmail.com. And you can send me whatever on there. You can find episodes on, like I said, every major podcast thing. I'm always looking for people to interview for my show. So, you know, any people out there that have like, oh, you should interview so-and-so, or, you know, you have questions that you think that I should be asking more often, I love suggestions for all of those. So
awesome. Yeah. You hear that? He wants audience suggestions. So definitely you can do that. For those who are listening on the podcast and watching, you can find all the links and notes on the show notes, the company's episode at www.thinjusticover.com. I'll leave them all linked there. Curious Joel, thank you for sharing your curious mind with the audience of the Andres Segovia Show. Give him a follow, check out his stuff. And one thing I didn't tell you on the stream, and I'll close it out on that. The reason that episode about you interviewing the roller coaster enthusiast was because you guys are talking about Knott's Berry Farm. That's my favorite theme park. I recently went there for the first time for the Boysenberry Festival. And I really haven't, boysenberried out.
I was able to go to that, and we actually went after that interview. We went a couple days later.
I don't know why I felt that you guys were filming it or recording it at Knott's Berry Farm. It's like, are they there?
We were in this room. He's a neighbor of mine. And so I was able to interview him. And then, you know, me and a few other friends went to Knott's Berry Farm for the Boysenberry Festival a few days later. And that was fantastic. It was really fun.
It was accidental for me, but it was my kid's first experience. I'm like, oh my goodness, it's the Boysenberry Festival. Hallelujah. Yeah, I Boysenberry got, man.
Gosh, I'm spilling things. I got the pass.
Yes.
Because it was so good. Like, there's so many options, and I'm like, yep, I'm doing it.
My wife said, did you really spend $50 on that thing? It's like, yes. Yes, I did. And then she's the one who used it.
Was it? That wasn't $50.
I don't know if it was cheaper online.
I got it online. Yeah, I got it online beforehand. Okay. Yeah. I spent $50 on that.
I spent $50 on it. I remember that.
I'm so sorry. I think it was like 30 maybe.
I think it depends on the day you went to.
Maybe, but I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I went on a busy day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it's on that note, it's that good. Yeah, it's worth it. Folks, Knott's Berry Farm, check it out. Ghost Rider. Probably it's the best wooden roller coaster in the world. Log ride doesn't get boring. There's our plug-in for Knott's Berry Farm. Curious Joel, thank you so much for being on the Andres Segovia Show. Love to have you again sometime.
Absolutely. It was an absolute pleasure. I've loved both of our conversations that we've had so far.
Awesome. See you in the next one.